not.
Like I've always done and always will.
Yes, it just builds up a little bit. Maybe get another stand.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Chantel Destra. It was a busy week at the state capitol with lawmakers back from a two-week recess. The building came alive with advocates and lawmakers rallying for a slew of legislative priorities, including fashion sustainability, environmental protections, artificial intelligence, and end-of-life care. At a rally, several Democratic lawmakers pushed for the Medical Aid in Dying bill to get passed before the end of session. This bill would allow terminally ill patients the option to request a life-ending drug from their physician. Over the years, there has been increased support for the bill, even from lawmakers who were originally opposed to it because of religious reasons. The sponsor of the bill and Assembly Health Committee Chair, Amy Pollan, expressed optimism about the bill's path forward.
I believe if the bill was brought to the floor, that we have votes.
And we'll continue to bring you updates on the progress of the bill in the weeks ahead. Now turning to another important health topic. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and this year the state budget included over $1 billion in funding for a slew of mental health priorities, from suicide prevention to youth and criminal justice services. We sat down with the State Office of Mental Health Commissioner, Dr. Ann Sullivan, to unpack how the funding will help provide support and aid in prevention efforts this year. Thank you so much for joining us today, Commissioner.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course, absolutely. So first, naturally, I wanted to start with the state budget, which included $1 billion in funding for mental health services. A portion of that money, of course, included funding for youth mental health services, as well as criminal justice services and suicide prevention. So I wanted to get your perspective on that funding and how it would impact the work that your office is doing.
Well, first of all, it's a great budget for mental health. And truly, the governor's investments for the past 2 years have just been historic in mental health. And last year was the $1 billion in last year's budget that included a lot of prevention services, included expansion of clinic services, included over 900 beds, residential right. beds, and 200 state hospital beds. This year's budget really builds on that $1 billion from last year in two major areas. The first is children's services, because the governor's commitment is huge in terms of making sure that our youth, especially post the pandemic, have every opportunity to grow and thrive. So there's $20 million in school-based programs. We can put any school that wants a school-based clinic can have a school-based clinic. And we would work with that school to establish those school-based services. There's been a lot of attention nationally on how helpful it is for youth in schools to get the services on site in those schools when they need them. So this gives the opportunity for us to expand. We currently have about 1,100 school-based clinics, and we just want to keep expanding. So those dollars are in the budget, as well as dollars. One of the things when the governor had her summit across the state, youth said they wanted to be able to help each other. So often the first person a youth might go to if they're having a mental health problem is a friend. So we're going to be doing a lot of work with what's called teen mental health first aid, where we actually work with teens to understand about mental health issues and how to talk with their fellow teens about them. So that's another exciting piece of the dollars for youth, and also for youth who are having more serious issues. We have a significant expansion of our Youth Act teams, what we call assertive community treatment teams, which will be expanded in this budget as well. And then also for youth services, and $4 million in a loan repayment for individuals who will work with youth in the mental health field. We've had a lot of success with loan repayments. Some of this started about 2 years ago, and there was some in last year's budget. And we've been able to increase the recruitment because we all know workforce is such an important issue. So the loan repayment for the child workforce is another big initiative in this year's budget.
Do you think the budget does enough to address the issue of prevention? I know that you've been pretty adamant about that. So would you say that it does enough to address that?
I think it's really, really doing a lot for prevention. You know, the work, and when we talk about a school-based clinic, it's not just therapy. The school-based clinics, because we increased the rates last year, will also be doing prevention. They'll be doing integrated prevention. By that, I mean, they'll be working on issues on mental health and also substance use. They also work with the teachers and with the parents. So the school-based clinics will be expanding what they're doing as well. They'll be doing a lot of work on prevention. And there's also dollars, on ongoing dollars that we have on specialized suicide prevention with youth, which is also something which we do in the schools as well. So yes, I think there's a lot going on with prevention.
And is the goal still to have a youth mental health clinic in every school across the state?
Yes, we would love to do that. And I think we said the school-based clinics are connected to community-based providers. So we give startup dollars to organize those school-based clinics. So we are getting the word out. We have already sent out, we're sending out notices to all the schools, and we're sending out notices to all the providers, and working very hard to see if we can get one in all the schools across the state.
Mm-hmm. And on the funding for criminal justice mental health, can you tell us how the funding of $33 million would help sort of ensure better outcomes in the criminal justice system?
Yeah, I think the this is a big investment in what partly what you can call diversion. In other words, individuals who come to a court, let's say, because they have gotten into the criminal justice system. We will have in that court navigators who will help them get the services they need and perhaps avoid actually being incarcerated. There's also dollars in the public safety budget to increase mental health courts across the state. And there's a goal to try to get one as far and wide in almost all the counties if possible. And those mental health courts then work with the court navigators to help individuals get the services they need. Now, they need often specialized services. So in addition to the court navigator and the mental health court, there are going to be specialized teams, what we call forensic assertive community treatment teams. Those teams will be multidisciplinary and will be there to really work with the individual right away, see them as soon as they maybe go to the judge or what after things have been adjudicated, they connect with that person and get them the and really provide the services for that person. And so there's a significant expansion of those teams. And then in addition, we have 100 residential beds, which will be transitional beds, because some individuals, the most important thing they need is a place to sleep and get some services while whatever is going on in the judicial system. So it's a big investment in a part of the mental health system that's hasn't been invested in that much before. And this gives an opportunity really to do the right thing for individuals who've kind of crossed into the justice system and hopefully prevent incarceration. And also those teams will work with individuals, perhaps also leaving prisons or jails so they don't go back. So it's an expansion of the services to help individuals really thrive in the community rather than get caught in the revolving door of the criminal justice system.
And it's clear that the budget provides funding for mental health services across different areas, but are there any areas that you're hoping to tap into in the years to come that may not be highlighted in this year's budget?
Well, one of the things that I would like to highlight is insurance. basically, this was in this year's budget, that the commercial payers will now have to pay the Medicaid rate for individuals seen in our licensed clinics. The odd thing has been that often commercial payers paid less than Medicaid. That didn't help the financial health of our system, but it also meant that individuals and families with insurance didn't have access to our clinics because the rates were so low. So the legislation was passed that they have to pay the Medicaid rate. That's huge. And also, anyone who has certain insurance carriers knows sometimes it's hard to find a therapist or a psychiatrist in those directories that you have from your various insurers. So the Department of Financial Services has put out regulations, which we expect to be effective as of 2025, that everyone is entitled to an appointment for mental health within 10 days. And that if an insurer can't provide that, they have to get out of network coverage without any increased cost to the recipient. And also that the directories have to all be updated regularly and be accurate. So those are big changes in terms of access, especially for individuals who have had issues with getting, you know, access through their insurers. So I'm really very hopeful that as that plays out in the future years and as of January 2025, especially for individuals who are commercially insured, that they will have better access as well to mental health services.
And what about support for workers in the mental health, industry? There was a lot of controversy about the COLA increase this year. How can the state better support those workers, but also address the issue of retention?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One, I think that the final COLA was 2.84%, and that's a significant COLA. And it's important to remember that for the past 2 years before, we had a 5% COLA and a 4% COLA. And for a decade before that, we had almost no COLAs. So I think that these COLAs are cumulative and that is helpful for the field. The other thing, which we have had a lot of uptake for, is a loan repayment. And that's for psychiatrists, nurse practitioners. And now the latest round of loan repayments will be for psychologists and social workers and licensed mental health counselors. And we've had lots of applications for that. If you get the loan repayment, you kind of got to work within the field, depending upon the deal, either 2 to 3 years. And that means people get into the field and hopefully they like it and they stay. But it's also a big recruitment in terms of getting people to start out and stay in the mental health field. So that's exciting. And I think that's been very successful. And we're going to be continuing those loan repayment programs. The other thing I think is, people come to the public mental health field because they want to do good things. They also want to learn. So this was in last year's budget. We put money into doing some best practices training, which especially for child services, which offers our providers the opportunity to do some training that we pay for at the state so that the practitioners can get best practice training. That's another thing that keeps people in the field.
Right.
Because they feel that they're really learning and growing. So there's a number of initiatives like that that we're continuing. We have a fellowship program for individuals from underserved populations that we're doing with SUNY and CUNY. So there's a number of things that we're doing to also continue to grow the workforce. But I think that the COLA this year certainly will help.
Really important work. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to connect with us today, Commissioner. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, but we look forward to having you back on the show.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being interested in mental health and for asking about all the great work that's happening. Thank you.
Absolutely. And we were speaking with Dr. Ann Sullivan, Commissioner of the New York State Office of Mental Health. We'll continue to bring you the latest updates on the funding for mental health priorities right here on the show. And one aspect of mental health that lawmakers have been focused on is related to maternal health. State Senator Summer Brouck, a Rochester Democrat and chair of the Senate Mental Health Committee, has been working to improve access to doula care across the state. We sat down with the senator at the beginning of the legislative session to understand the importance of prioritizing maternal health for expectant mothers. Here's that conversation. Thank you so much for being here, Senator.
Thanks for coming.
Now, last year you released a report that really spelled out the state of doula care in New York. Coming out of that, there was a lot of revelations and some policy recommendations. So I wanted to get your perspective on why doula care and maternal health has continued to be one of your top priorities as a lawmaker.
Absolutely. Well, it was something that I obviously was interested in as a legislator in general, just being a woman in New York. But I have to say, the big moment for me came in 2022 when I became a mother and went through the birthing process. And I really credit my doula for really helping me have a healthy outcome and a positive outcome for me and my daughter. And so, you know, having that informational, physical, emotional support that the doula provided allowed me to actually, you know, enjoy that process. And even following the birth, a lot of folks don't realize that doulas provide a lot of support postpartum as well. And all of that was just so tremendously helpful. And so even after having that experience, it became very clear to me that it was going to be my mission to make sure that every New Yorker who has a baby has at least the option to have a doula. So that has really been a driving, you know, motivation to get this work done. But then the other piece of it is simply being a Black woman in New York State, right? So really, the United States is actually the most dangerous place for someone to give birth in the developed world. But on top of that, Black women, especially here in New York, are 5 times more likely to die in childbirth or related to pregnancy. So when you look at statistics like that, it's really, really scary. And what we know is that doula care, again, these are non-clinical professionals that offer, you know, emotional, informational, physical support, are actually able to help intercept some of the negative outcomes that happen specifically for women of color. And so when you look at that and you see this could be a really huge help to fighting the maternal mortality crisis, it's a no-brainer that it's something that I want to continue to support here in New York. Mm-hmm.
And the good thing is you're not alone in trying to expand access to doula care. The governor signed one of your bills that you sponsored to create a directory of doulas in the state. So can you tell me about your conversations with the governor to expand doula care in the state?
The governor has been a tremendous partner on this. As we saw in her State of the State, even this year in 2024, she is prioritizing maternal health, maternal mental health. So the bill that was passed last year was our community doula directory. And the whole point of that is that we were aware that starting January 1st of this year, there was going to be Medicaid reimbursement rollout for doula care. So that means that any person who's covered with Medicaid, who gives birth in New York State, can now be reimbursed should they choose to hire a doula. And just to put a finer point on that, nearly 50% of births in New York State are covered under Medicaid. So when we think about changing the trajectory of New York State, we are literally affecting potentially nearly half of the births in New York State, which is so huge. And so after having that Medicaid rollout, now we think about, okay, how do we make it accessible? How do we make sure people know about it, right? And so that's why the community doula directory was so important, because DOH really needs to take the responsibility for having accurate information so that anyone who's searching for a doula on Medicaid can easily go on the DOH website and know that they can find vetted doulas in their area. And so that's what that bill was about, because at the end of the day, if you have, you know, you can have all the doulas in the world accepting Medicaid and being, you know, enrolled, but if mothers and birthing people can't find that information, what good is it? That's where we need the information to get. And so the community doula directory is a huge step in that. And so I was very, very proud to be able to stand with the governor in November and have her sign that bill.
So expectant mothers enrolled in Medicaid will be reimbursed if they choose to utilize a doula. But what about mothers that aren't enrolled in Medicaid? Is there any thinking that, you know, you'll expand to have statewide mandates for private insurance companies to cover that cost as well?
Yeah. I mean, for me, yes. My goal is yes. My goal is, again, everybody in New York who wants a doula should be able to have one. What I will say is that usually we start with the Medicaid reimbursement, right? Because we know so many people are served through Medicaid. But a lot of times what happens, and this happened in other states as well, private insurance companies see what is happening through Medicaid and will a lot of times follow suit. So I'm really, really happy to say that I've had, even in the last couple of weeks, conversations with commercial insurance providers who have said they intend on starting the reimbursement process for doula care. And so, you know, I hope more insurance providers will take note and realize that at the end of the day, it can be a cost-saving measure for an insurance provider. Right? So if you look at some of the data of using a doula, doulas actually decrease the amount of time during birth by up to 25%. So if you think about that, that's less time in a hospital, right? Less time the insurance has to pay. They decrease the number of emergency C-sections, which are incredibly expensive and somewhat dangerous procedures. So if you're looking at it from an insurance provider's perspective, spending $1,500, even $2,000 on reimbursement for doula care could save you tens of thousands of dollars if it's improving the outcomes at the end of the day for that mother and the baby. So right now it is not mandated in state law, but my hope is that we can work with providers to see that there is tremendous value in doing this.
And as chair of the Senate Mental Health Committee, in what ways does support and resources for expectant mothers really help them through their pregnancy? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, so, you know, I will say doulas help with a lot of the physical labor, if you will, but they also help on the mental health side. So I've shared with several folks that one of the most powerful moments I had with my doula was the first day I was sent back from the hospital, sent home, new mom, no idea what I'm doing, very confused. I have this beautiful little being in my arms and just so focused on her, so focused on everything that I need to do for her. And my doula asked me a very simple question. She just looked at me and said, "How are you?" And it was just life-changing because I hadn't really checked in on myself. And just giving me that space to say, am I okay? Do I feel emotionally, psychologically okay? Luckily, I did, and I felt like I had a lot of support. But even having someone to ask those questions of new mothers is so, so important. And actually, maternal mental health conditions are the number one most common pregnancy complication. So 1 in 5 birthing people will face some type of maternal mental health condition. And it's more than just postpartum depression, right? It can be the onset of anxiety, of OCD in the postpartum time period. And so we've done a lot when it comes to maternal mental health as well. So we got the maternal mental health work group passed in last year's budget and funded. Yeah, and I wanna make sure folks understand too that that's one of the only work groups that will reimburse for childcare. And that was a really big component for me to have in that legislation, because if we truly want affected individuals, which are parents or mothers, on this work group to really be able to speak to their experience, we can't say, oh, come do this work group. It's a voluntary body, right? You're gonna come and volunteer your time, but we're not gonna take care of your kid for you. So they actually will reimburse for childcare, and they have started to meet. So that is incredible. We also, last year, also passed a bill to study the depression screenings that were done. And this actually came out of my own personal experience of going through these screenings at my child's pediatric appointments. And we realized that there was some space there to perhaps expand which providers are giving these screenings. And so the bill that we passed in the legislature this year, we're hoping to get signed by the governor, actually will expand which providers are encouraged to give these screenings. So for example, I think a lot of parents put their own health on the back burner when their child is in need. And so, you know, I didn't miss any of those pediatric appointments. It was 2 days, it was 2 weeks, right? You're going there so often. So now DOH will put out recommendations that at pediatric appointments, they're also supplying these depression screenings to new parents. And I think that that's really important because you know that they're more likely to go to these appointments. And now there's a chance to really hopefully intercept and perhaps even start treatment plans for anyone who needs it.
And as you continue to focus on doula care and maternal health in the years ahead, what are the implications of not expanding access to doula care and focusing on, for example, postpartum anxiety disorders and really pushing forward that work group that you mentioned?
I mean, if we don't do this work, we already see what happens. It's the moment we're in, right? So when we didn't have people in positions of policymaker positions, when we didn't have mothers, you know, in the legislature, we were failing mothers throughout New York State because our maternal mortality crisis is getting worse. I don't think a lot of people understand that. A lot of things in this country have gotten better, sure, but the truth is when it comes to maternal health, we are worse off today than we were years ago. And so if we don't continue to make these investments and really put in the work that's gonna reach the end user, right, reach the New Yorker who needs the help, we will see it continue to get worse. And when I say get worse, I'm talking about literally losing lives of mothers, losing lives of our children, and that is 100% unacceptable. And so that's why, you know, I call it beating the drum. We're just gonna keep beating the drum. And, you know, I can't stress enough that we can see and feel the difference when we have people who understand these issues in these positions and who are willing to use that and have the courage to move these things forward. Right? The governor could have just as easily not included maternal mental health in her priorities, but she did. And so what we're doing is working, and I don't think anyone in this sector is anywhere close to stopping. So we're gonna keep beating the drum and keep going really until we solve this crisis.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot there, and there's a lot to look forward to this session, but we'll have to leave it there for now. Thank you so much, Senator, for your time.
Thank you so much.
And we were speaking with Senator Samra Brouk, Chair of the Senate Mental Health Committee. And with just a few weeks left in session, it's unclear whether or not those initiatives will make it over the legislative finish line at this juncture. But we'll continue to bring you updates on the status of those bills right here on the show. You can also find more information on mental health resources as well as our own youth mental health toolkit on our website. That's at nynow.org. We'll also have a special mental health edition of our New York Now newsletter this week. You can subscribe at newsletter.nynow.org or by scanning the QR code on the screen. Well, that does it for this edition of New York Now. Thank you for tuning in and see you next week.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.